So thank you both for coming in. As Robin's probably told you, we're with the FCIC. Let me give you the blurb we give everybody before we get into the meat of the interview. We were established by statute passed last year to figure out the causes of the financial crisis, and so we're trying to do that. That statute tells us to look at securitization practices. It tells us to look at derivatives. It tells us to look at every institution that failed or would have failed but for the receipt of government assistance. We know that ACA was involved in managing and investing in synthetic CDOs. Of course, we know about the Abacus transaction with Goldman, and Goldman was one of those institutions that received exceptional government assistance. So that's why we contacted ACA, and that's why we contacted you. So, you know, we want to talk to you generally about ACA's business, but of course we want to talk to you specifically about the 2007 AC1 deal also. But before we do that, what I'd like to do with everybody, so I know who they are and what they are in context, can you just give me your educational background and a brief description of your work background since college?
My name is Laura Schwartz. I went to the University of Michigan, graduated from there, and then went to NYU and got a Master of Business Administration from NYU. I started working at New York Life Insurance in January of 1984. I started in their real estate investment group, and I spent 14 and a half years at New York Life Insurance Company in lots of different investment roles. The world started as making commercial mortgage loans and eventually evolved into, from my job there, running their structured product portfolio, which was asset-backed, commercial mortgage-backed, all of those credit cards, autos, you know, all of those kind of structured products. And I left New York Life in 1998 and went to Merrill Lynch, where I became a banker of residential and commercial mortgage-backed securities. I was at Merrill until August of 2002, and I joined ACA right after Labor Day in 2002. I worked at ACA through September until beginning of October of 2007, so just over 5 years. And since then, I've worked in a sales and trading capacity on structured products at a small regional broker-dealer.
Okay, so when did you join New York Life?
1984, February probably, 1984.
And you were there till 98?
I was there till 98. Then from Merrill from 98 to 02, and at ACA from 02 through 07.
Okay, can you give me a general description of your job responsibilities at ACA in that five-year time period?
When I was hired at ACA, I was hired to be the portfolio manager for their structured product CDO asset management business, primarily focusing on their ABS CDOs. I was hired as the portfolio manager for their ABS CDOs. And I worked there for 3 years in that capacity, running the credit and portfolio management on the ABS CDOs. And then I believe it was 05, it may have been 04, now I don't even remember, my boss at the time left. I think it was probably 04. And I took over her role, which I became head of the asset management for all of our products, which included asset-backed securities, corporate bonds, and leveraged loans. And I continued to run that and the credit teams of portfolio management and credit until probably 2006. And in 2006, they separated credit from portfolio management so that our credit could support other areas at ACA as well, and ran the asset management business until I left in September, October 2007.
Okay. So we know from some documents that we've seen that you were involved in selecting the collateral in that abacus transaction. Did your job responsibilities prior to 2006, when they separated the credit and portfolio management functions, involve that?
Well, I would have said it slightly different. I was not in charge. Our credit department was responsible for reviewing and approving or presenting to a credit committee all of the underlying residential mortgage-backed, commercial mortgage-backed, corporate bonds, whatever credit we were reviewing. It was reviewed by the appropriate credit committee, a credit team, and presented to a committee. As the portfolioist in charge of portfolio management, me, my team, was able to use the entire universe of approved credits and go through those and select a portfolio based on all the credits that had already been approved by ACA. So it may seem like a slight nuance, but everything that was in, for instance, the abacus deal had already really been approved and reviewed by our credit team and our credit committee. So all we didn't select and approve the underlying credits. We just selected them from a universe that had already been approved.
So is this on a CUSA by CUSA basis, or is it more like approving countrywide mortgages?
No, CUSA by CUSA basis. Mm-hmm. In fact, what our committee did is, because in a deal, a residential mortgage back, let's take those because they're the heart of the discussion here, residential mm-hmm. mortgage backs, generally, one deal off of a countrywide shelf, for instance, since you mentioned the name, mm-hmm. would issue debt rated from AAA all the way down to sort of BB and even unrated mm-hmm. tranches. Mm-hmm. So our credit team would look at that deal overall, determine whether they liked the shelf that it was being issued off of, the underwriter, the servicer, all of those kind of things. They would run multiple different stresses, and then they would recommend the lowest credit attachment point that they were comfortable with. So if they approved the BBB tranche, then anything BBB and above was eligible and considered approved. So it wasn't necessarily like when you say CUSIP by CUSIP, mm-hmm. we didn't put in every single CUSIP, mm-hmm. but if we approved the BBB, then we could use the AA and the AAA in portfolios. Mm-hmm. If they only approved the AAA, then only that particular CUSIP could be used.
Mm-hmm. So, thank you. I was asking something a little different.
Okay, I'm sorry.
That was valuable information anyway, so I appreciate it. But all I really wanted to know was the role you were performing in the abacus deal, were those roles you were performing at ACA for other deals before 2006, from 2004 throughout when you were head of asset management? I was just trying to draw the distinction between your description of your job responsibilities.
No real distinction. I was always basically in charge of the ABS CDO business. So.
And part of that included selecting from this existing universe collateral for synthetic CDOs?
Or my team selecting, but ultimately all reporting to me, so I would take responsibility for that. Yes.
Okay. So ACA's counsel has responded to our document request, and Robin, I think we talked about this earlier. But they've just given us a listing by year of various deals that I will show you. Starts there, but most of them are on the second page. And all I really want to know is like the Abacus 2007 one deal with Goldman, are these deals where you were essentially performing the same type of function as you were in that deal?
That's
ACA question
for every single one?
Yeah, just generally.
Oh, generally, yes. ACA was selected the assets in every single one of
okay.
these deals.
And
sorry, I don't need
no, that, okay, that's great. And then you or your team were the ones personally involved in doing that, yes?
The credit team, of course, reviewed and approved and presented, and then we constructed portfolios from all of those approved credits. This one, I came in at the closing time, but it was a managed deal, so I continue to be responsible for this.
She's pointing to the first one.
Sorry, the very first one, ACA ABS 2002-1. This, I was there at the closing, but this was an actively managed deal, so it's completely responsible for on an ongoing basis. And these two corporate deals were done actually before I joined as well. I'm pointing to ACA CDS 2001-1 and 2002-1, but those were actively managed, so it's responsible on an ongoing once I took over the entire asset management platform.
Did you also work on this last one in 2007 since you left in 2007?
I believe that's the Goldman deal, so yes, that one closed before I left.
That's a CLO.
That's a CLO. Right. All of these were... I was hired just right, but this is a Goldman deal too.
Okay.
Just so you know.
Okay.
Sorry. I'm pointing to ACA CLO 2007-1. It's a Goldman deal. They were the underwriter on that one as well.
Good memory.
This is my life.
So, were there generally, other than the Abacus deal with Goldman, were there other deals where folks other than ACA were involved in selecting the collateral?
We always let our investors look at the targeted portfolio. Deals were either synthetic or cash, or a combination of cash and synthetic. And cash deals had a very long sort of ramp-up warehousing period. So by the time we started marketing the deals, we would have 70% of the portfolio purchased, and investors always wanted to see those. So there were times when investors asked that we not include certain names, and we would talk about that and weigh the pros and cons of that versus them investing or whatever. So there was always a discussion with investors on the credits.
Okay, and I mean, the allegation is there, so I might as well cover it since that's where we are. Did you know that Paulson was going only short on the Abacus 2007 AC1 deal?
I did not know that.
Okay, and do you know if anyone else at ACA knew that? I know you can't speak for everybody else.
I do not believe that anybody else at ACA knew that.
Okay, now the SEC alleges in the complaint that, words to the effect, it would have been unlikely had ACA known that they would have allowed Paulson to be involved in the selection of the collateral. Is that accurate?
I think I would have worded it differently. I mean, I think ACA stands by the fact that we selected that portfolio. Every name in that portfolio had been reviewed and approved by ACA. I think ACA would have thought long and hard about doing a deal from a reputational perspective if they had known that somebody was solely betting against it.
Okay. In other deals where ACA has been the collateral manager, and again, maybe I've asked this, but I just want to make sure the record's clear, do you know whether or not any investor in any other synthetic deals was going solely short?
I do not know for a fact. I do not believe other investors were solely going short, but I do not know that for a fact.
Okay. Now, it's also alleged in the SEC complaint that had ACA known about Paulson shorting the deal, that it would have been unlikely that ACA would have invested in the deal. And I think they invested like $909 million in the deal. Is that accurate?
I think there's sort of two different things. Again, the investment in the deal was through a super senior guarantee done by our structured credit department. While I sat on that committee, I was not involved in the day-to-day business of that at all, and how they generated business and what criteria they used to approve, other than sort of sitting in the committee and seeing final product. My gut is that if we had known that an investor was only shorting us, I don't think we would have, agreed to be the selection agent, nor do I then think it would have gotten all the way to the structured credit. But I don't know that. That's my gut.
So I know I've seen in the documents, I'll try to find it. But there was a document that is, I think, the presentation to the committee you sat on recommending the long investment by ACA in the deal. Explain to me how that works, since you weren't involved in the decision to invest, but you are on the committee, you are
right,
part of the CDO selection process.
you know, I'm going to go back again. This was now over 3 years ago. All this took place until all of this came back to my attention. Obviously, this is now basically public record. I did not even remember that ACA, or know for a fact that ACA had taken that long position. So with that premise, this was an everyday business for ACA, whether it was managing CDOs or investing in the credit default swaps on the top of CDO positions through our structured credit. So just as part of an everyday process, you know, they were looking at the transaction. There's a whole team that worked on those structured credit pieces. And at a certain point, I got a memo about a credit committee on the piece. I just don't remember specifics.
Is that a document? I think that's the document that's presented to the committee. Is that it?
That's correct.
Okay.
To the best of my knowledge, yes. Again, this was not produced by my group at ACA. It was produced by a different group. We had three different business lines at ACA. One was my business line, which was the asset management group. One was the structured credit group that this was responsible for. And the third was the municipal line.
Okay. Nobody at Paulson ever told you that they were going to go short on the deal?
No.
Okay. I have at least seen, since the lawsuit got filed, a report by in the media that Paolo Pellegrini apparently testified before the SEC that he did tell either you or someone at ACA. Did Mr. Pellegrini ever tell you that Paulson was going to short the deal?
No.
Okay. I believe Mr. Tour testified in front of Levin's committee, sort of, that he told you or someone at ACA that Paulson was going to short the deal. Did Mr. Tour tell you that Paulson was going to short the deal?
No.
Did anyone at Goldman tell you that Paulson was going to short the deal?
No.
Okay. Did anyone tell you that Paulson was going to short the deal?
No.
Okay.
Not that I recall.
Just so we're clear, when you say short, you mean solely short.
Solely short.
Yes.
Solely short.
And then there's also allegations, and I've seen some documents that indicate this, that you or folks at ACA were under the impression that Paulson actually was going to be long in the deal, perhaps in the first loss tranches. Is that true, that you believe that at some point?
Yes.
Okay, and why did you believe that?
In looking back again, this was over 3 years ago, and in looking back at the documentation, there is a specific email that identifies Paulson as a transaction sponsor, and it talks about a pre-committed first loss piece. And that would, the pre-committed first loss piece would generally be known as the equity tranche. And from all, from what I can remember, inferring from that Paulson would have been the equity investor.
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
So is that, does the term sponsor generally mean equity tranche in the CDO business? Is that why?
I don't think there was a clearly, absolutely sort of defined, but when they would be used together, that would have been my inference, when they would have been used together in the same, very short document.
Together with
pre-committed equity, that would have been my inference from that.
Is that the email you were referring to that made you believe that Paulson was going to be long and that was you as a sponsor? For the record and for the tape recorder, it's a January 10th, 2007 email.
Yes.
Or an email string, I guess. No, just an email. Okay, and then other than the email, did Mr. Tor or anyone else at Goldman tell you that Paulson was going to be long the equity tranche in the deal?
I do not recall any specific instance where they told me. Through my documentation, I do refer to them as equity and equity perspective, and I do not recall that ever being corrected.
Okay. Okay. And do you recall if anybody at Paulson ever told you they were going to be long on the equity tranche?
No, I do not recall them ever telling me that either.
Let me... Have you ever seen this document before? For the record, it's a January 29th, 2007 email that looks to be an internal Paulson email.
No, I have never seen this document dated Monday, January 29th, 2007.
Okay, let me just say for the record, assuming it's internal, but it's an email to Mr. Pellegrini that states, you're going to play the role of potential equity investor when you meet with BlackRock and TCW, correct? And Pellegrini responds, I already met with BlackRock and I will stick to the script with TCW. Other than seeing this email, have you ever heard anything or seen any documents that indicated Paulson was lending itself out or was representing that it was going to be an equity investor in synthetic CDO deals when it was not?
I have no knowledge of that.
It sounds like Mr. Pellegrini was your main contact at Paulson. Is that true?
And Shihanzen, Mr. Shihanzen.
Okay. And you were meeting with them and talking with them about the collateral to be the reference collateral in the Abacus deal. Is that correct?
From the documentation, yes.
What does that mean?
I remember meeting them, right? And I see the back and forth in the email over 3.5 years, over 3 years ago. It's sort of hard to recall specifics, but I do recall the meetings. Don't recall the specific context, but I see it in the emails.
Just to clarify, your very first meeting with them did not involve the select to talk about the collateral.
I do not believe it did. What I recall of the very first meeting was basically ACA presenting its criteria to be a portfolio selection agent.
Given that ACA was selecting the collateral, why did it matter if Paulson was going to exclusively short the deal and not be long in it at all?
In and of itself, in a tiny little, you know, sort of standalone vacuum, it would not have mattered. But again, from ACA's perspective, ACA wanted to be a long-term asset manager in the market, generally with institutional investors, and our reputation was really a paramount concern. And I don't think you would enhance your reputation by doing a transaction really solely for the benefit of somebody to bet against it.
When you were at ACA, were you ever approached with a deal like this where it was disclosed that an investor wanted to exclusively short the deal?
Not that I recall, no.
So then you don't recall rejecting any such deals?
No, and I don't. Sorry.
I guess that's something you think you would recall?
I think it is something I would recall if they would only want to go short.
So in most synthetic deals, would you have been aware of who the short party was on the transaction and what their motive was, or would that have been not transparent?
When we wrote a deal that we went long synthetically, generally the other side could be done in several ways. One, we could go out, and we sometimes did, and we broadly, you know, went out with a bid list basically on who wants to take the other side, who wants to go short. And in derivatives, there are approved counterparties. There are basically eight or so firms at any one time that are approved. Mm-hmm. And so any of those eight could have bid to be the one to go short.
Approved, you mean by your firm?
No. By basically, you had to be an approved counterparty. I guess it wasn't on an exchange these days. It could be through, like, market partners or things like that. Individuals didn't come to ACA to take the other side. It was all done through one of the major broker-dealers. So that's why I say they're probably 8 to 10 sort of counterparties from that perspective. So we could go long, and the short could be done in that way, sort of broadly syndicated, and then lots of people could bid on it. Or you could do, like we did in the Abacus, more of an overall portfolio credit default swap. And then you were just facing a correlation desk of a major firm. And what that correlation desk then did on the other side, I mean, who knows? They ran a whole book, so that wasn't, you know, we never really knew what was on the other side.
So when you say a correlation desk, do you, in the Abacus deal, do you just mean Goldman?
Big Goldman, right. The part within Goldman that was responsible, right?
Right, but I apologize, I'm not in the business, and sometimes some of these terms go right over my head.
Me too.
And I need, as one of my colleagues who's not here would say, remedial education.
Okay.
But when the Abacus deal, my understanding of the Abacus deal when it closes is that Goldman, in the first instance, took the short side of that synthetic deal. Is that correct?
In that deal, it is correct.
Okay.
Correct.
So, did you know anything about whether or not Goldman was going to participate out that short position to anybody else?
No, we had no knowledge of what Goldman was going to do with that risk.
And is that common in these kind of deals, again, for the uninformed?
I think it is common that you don't know what's going to happen because they run a book of synthetics. They could be, you know, hedging their own book. They could be long. They could be short. They could be doing lots of things.
So what did Goldman tell you guys about why they wanted to do this deal?
I don't think they ever specifically said anything, but generally for distributing and underwriting debt, you earn, you know, 3 to 4 percentage points on the overall debt. That's debt and equity that's distributed. There is a placement fee, and that's why they did the business.
Was ACA involved at all in how the proceeds were used that were paid by the long investors, how those proceeds were used, the $150 million that IKB lost?
You mean in terms of it went into the collateral agreement and the securities that were selected to go into that collateral agreement?
Correct.
Generally, we were not, and this was pretty standard across the street, because the Goldman or Merrill's or whoever was that party to that collateral agreement, they would guarantee the value of those securities. So we generally considered them very good credit risk. So where they actually went, we were not generally involved in, no.
Okay, and understanding you weren't generally involved, did ACA know in this deal how, what type of collateral is going to be purchased with the long proceeds?
I don't remember. I don't recall remembering what they were going to do with the proceeds in this.
Okay. One of the things that you probably know now from the various hearings and news articles that in this time frame, the late 06 and into April 07, when the Abacus deal closed, Goldman was in the process or had completed the process from going net long on real estate to net short on real estate. Did you know then that Goldman was in the process of reducing its exposure to real estate and mortgage assets?
No.
No discussions about that at the time?
No.
Okay, would that have made a difference?
If they were in the process of going from long to short, I don't know. I mean, I just really don't.
Okay. Bear with me while I look at my notes.
May.
Of course.
So was there an equity investor after all in Abacus? I guess I've seen different accounts.
Nobody has definitively told me. Either way, I have never seen anything specific. My understanding from the Senate testimony is that no, there was not an equity investor.
Would that be something you would know at the time as a CDO manager, or how would that usually work?
Well, we were not the underwriters, of course. The investment bank was the underwriters. Mm-hmm. So we would always ask for a list of investors or try to get from them a list of investors, but they did not have to share that. Remember, that's their, to them, that's their sort of proprietary information, who they can sell this paper to, because they wouldn't want us sharing that with, you know, other investment banks are going to the investors directly and going around them. So it, we only found out if they wanted us to, you know, at the time. Mm-hmm. And sometimes, if we, even if we didn't find out at the time, we would find out after the fact. Investors would sometimes contact us and say, oh, we invested in your deal. Can you put us on your monthly newsletter or something like that?
Really? So I guess we spoke to some market participant who's, and I'd have to look through my notes to figure out who it was, but who said that, and I think they were probably just going off of what was in websites, that the equity tranche was a unfunded synthetic tranche. In other words, it didn't really exist. And the I guess the only tranches that did exist were the IKB. Well, the IKB was the unfunded one, and then the supertainer was unfunded. Is that a, does that make sense? That could be the structure?
It could have. I mean, it's, you know, funded and unfunded and synthetic, like you never really have to fund, right? You could mm-hmm. always be, you could take the equity risk without funding it. You could do it through also a credit default swap. Mm-hmm. IKB, again, I don't even know 100% what they did at all. Nobody's ever told me.
Mm-hmm.
If they took it in funded form, then they took a note as opposed to a credit default swap. ACA mm-hmm. is unfunded, would have taken a credit default swap. You could be unfunded equity as well as unfunded AAA or funded. It didn't really matter. And when I look back at the offering memorandum, it's not clear whether what is what.
Is it, would that have been an unusual structure?
No, on a transaction, no. The, where you could take synthetic risk, no, you could always go either way.
On any tranche?
On a synthetic. If it was a cash deal supported by all cash assets, mm-hmm. you had to go pretty much, initially you had to be funded. Does that make sense?
I'm still not sure whether I understand whether there even was somebody on the other side of the equity, whether as a, receiving a note or as a CDS. I think it was implied in one of the websites that it was just theoretical. There wasn't anybody taking the equity risk.
That is what I have been led to believe by the Senate testimony, but my understanding was there was going to be somebody on the other side.
That was your, at the time, that was your...
Correct.
Okay. And that specific thing, that having the equity be just that theoretical, was that common?
In a transaction that's 100% synthetic, mm-hmm. it's all sort of theoretical, mm-hmm. right? right? So it would have been unfunded. It could have been unfunded.
Okay.
Yeah, sorry.
So I just want to show you a couple of documents and confirm that they mean what I think they mean.
Okay.
So let me show you this February 28, 2007 email from you to the CDO team. It says Abacus 2007 AC1 was launched yesterday. And then it says, while it is a CDO, one investor is taking all the equity and the BBB risk, paren the 0 to 9% tranche, and our role is one of portfolio selection agent. Let me show that to you, but my question is going to be, who was the investor that you believe was taking the equity tranche and the triple B tranche?
My understanding was that it was Paulson that was taking the first loss tranche.
And I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. And that understanding was based on?
In going back 3 years later, in looking at the email back and forth by Goldman showing transaction sponsor pre-committed first loss by me referring to Paulson pretty continuously as the equity investor equity perspective.
Okay. What do you know about Paulson and his hedge funds in general at the time? Did you know that generally? Okay.
Until Goldman had mentioned, I had never even heard of them. So I think I had, you know,
and in any
looked it up at the time, but, you know, I don't recall. I didn't know them.
Okay. At at the time being late 06 to April 07 when you're doing the deal, you don't recall any discussions with Pellegrini or others where, you know, generally we're short, we're going short?
No.
Okay. Let me ask you if you've seen this document, which I believe is the same date as the Senior Credit Committee presentation that you have there. And for the record, February 27, 2007, email string, Goldman document, after the announcement of the deal, a guy named Edward Steffelin writing to Peter Ostrom. By the way, have you heard of either Peter Ostrom or Edward Steffelin?
Steffelin, yes, I have.
And who was Edward Steffelin? He's a Goldman guy, I can tell you that.
No, I don't think he was. I think Ed Steffelin was with a firm called GSC.
Oh, GSC. That's right.
And I don't think he's Goldman.
That's GSC, so something else.
Yes. So GSC, Peter Ostrom was, of course, a banker at Goldman. So I would not have ever seen that email, I do not believe. But I don't think he was at, I think he's not at Goldman.
Do you know if GSC was being considered for this deal?
I do not know.
Okay. Did you know GSC declined to do the deal?
I did not know that.
Let me show you something else first, okay. And we'll try to go in chronological order. Let me show you that, and for the record, that is a January 11th email internal to Goldman that I believe says GSC is not going to do the deal. Seen that email
no,
before?
No, I have not seen this email.
And just to close it out, I think I asked you this, but did you know GSC was looking at potentially being the CDO manager on this deal?
No, I did not. I knew that, I mean, as you can see, even from my correspondence back and forth, Paulson was considering multiple managers. Mm-hmm. Did not know who.
Right, and one of the documents you wrote, I think you referred to it as
a
beauty pageant or something. Yes, yes, yes. Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, we know from the documents that, at least in the early time period, you too were, I guess, uncomfortable with the initial collateral and only agreed to like 55 of the 123, but eventually you guys came to agreement on what the collateral was going to be, correct?
Yes.
Okay.
We suggested alternatives.
Right. So this was the other email I was going to show you that I thought was Goldman, but in fact is GSC. Take a look at that. The bottom part is just announcing the deal with Goldman. The top part in the line is obviously the one I'm interested in. So my first question is simply, have you seen that email before?
I have not.
Okay. And I don't know if I said it, but for the record, it's a February 27, 2007 email from Steffelin to Ostrom, responding to the new issue announcement for the Abacus deal that says, I do not have to say how bad it is that you guys are pushing this thing. Do you ever have any discussions with Mr. Steffelin about this deal, by any chance?
Not that I recall. Mm-hmm.
Okay. Never called up and said, what are you guys doing?
I don't remember, to be honest. I mean, I spoke to Ed periodically. I don't recall.
Sorry, just trying to keep documents in chronological order. So, down the road, after the deal closes and ACA does the $909 million ballpark transaction, later on in 07 and 08, the deal obviously goes south for the long investors. Any discussions between you and Goldman after the deal closes and the deal goes south?
No, in fact, I left ACA about beginning of October of 2007. I do not think it, you know, I don't think at that point there had been any, you know, credit event or et cetera under the deal at that point. I also think, you know, unfortunately, almost every deal went bad.
Sure.
I don't think this one was particularly different from any other deal.
Okay. Understanding you left in October, at least the allegation in the SEC complaint is that by October 24th, 2007, 83% of the RMBS in Abacus had been downgraded and 17% were on negative watch. Jogging the memory bells about whether you heard any, had any discussion with Goldman about those downgrades or whether you were gone by then.
I was definitely gone by October 24th or whatever that date is. No, I did not have any recollection.
Okay. And just, I mean, overall, whether you're at ACA or gone, and whether it's before or after October 2007, any discussions with Goldman after the deal goes south?
No.
Did you have any discussions with the folks at IKB that invested $150 million in the deal?
I spoke to IKB as part of my general course of business. They were long-term investors in ACA deals. Do not recall any specific conversations about the Abacus deal. I have met with them repeatedly, both in New York at conferences, in their offices.
Putting aside that Paulson was exclusively shorting the deal, was their role as just as an investor in terms of selecting the collateral or having a voice in the selection unusual? I mean, you mentioned before that other investors, you know, would comment on the collateral to be included in a deal.
No, I mean, it may, you know, have been a little bit more broad at first, and that they looked at many, many more of the securities, but even IKB commented on securities.
Okay. I think when I looked at the documents, anyway, the first mention I see of the collateral, I thought actually was either a Paulson email or a Goldman email saying, here's the first slug of 123 securities. Yeah, there's I can show it to you.
Yeah, I believe it's from Goldman to me.
Okay.
So in fact, as I said before, I'm not really sure who generated that initial portfolio, whether it was Paulson or Goldman or what it came to ACA via Goldman.
And so there's an email back by you guys that says, by you guys, it might have actually been you, sorry.
That's fine.
It's a term of art. where Laura Schwartz says 55 of the 123 we can live with, and that's the email. Does that mean you have this pre-existing universe and whatever 123 minus 55 weren't in that pre-existing universe that you talked about earlier?
Well, some of them that we didn't like them at the recommended attachment point. I told you earlier how we could approve things at AAA or AA or BBB, and here they were looking at BBB. So the first exclusion here is we didn't like them at the recommended attachment point. So we might have approved them from a AA perspective, but not from the BBB perspective. Then the second, there are lower rated tranches that are already on negative watch, so we may have approved them at one point, but the minute they've been downgraded or so, they got kicked out of our system as, you know, not up to our quality. And three, they're just some names susceptible to investor pushback. So a combination of lots of different things made us only approve 55.
Okay. And when you say there are some names susceptible to investor pushback, what is that? I mean, I know what investor pushback means, but what investor names?
Not investor names. Some names of the underlying deals. These weren't the investors. These were the shelves and the mortgage originators and servicers. And I mentioned Long Beach, which was the subprime arm of Washington Mutual. We did have some concerns about them because their deals were some of the first to experience, you know, ratings downgrades. So investors didn't like those names very much. And same with Fremont, was a, you know, small, very fast-growing California originator. And some, you know, people were concerned about their name.
And I've seen reference in other documents to push back on New Century. Was that another company that
Correct, because of their growth.
So when you get, you know, you're under the impression that, that Paulson is going to go long on the equity tranche, and yet here's 123 issues of which you're only comfortable with 55. I mean, do you recall having any discussion with Paulson saying, why would you want these? They're not good.
No, not really. I mean, we didn't, no. I mean, for us, we were selecting the portfolios, so they supplied a list. We were told them which we were comfortable, and we said what we would do in exchange, and they could take it or leave it. Didn't really matter to us why they wanted them.
Was that common, that a list would initially be provided by an investor where over half of it would be rejected by you guys?
We didn't do that many purely synthetic deals, so I'd have to go back to Collège and Millbrook. I mean, they were even older than this. I just don't remember. You know, this has all been jobs because I get to see it all the time. I don't recall in those deals how those portfolios were created.
Okay, and this, and I apologize, this may require some more remedial education. Why would it make a difference, though, on whether it's collateral that's simply referenced in a synthetic CDO or collateral that actually exists in a cash CDO?
Well, the beauty, in a way, of the synthetic deals is you can look at the entire universe. You don't have to go buy the cash bonds. For instance, if we wanted to buy, I'm just using an example. I mean, if we wanted to buy this Goldman deal, this GSAMP deal, for instance, and we wanted to buy $10 million of it in cash, well, the tranche could have only been $50 million at time of new issue, and there was just no way to ever find the cash paper. Whereas the beauty about a synthetic is if we liked this deal, we didn't have to worry about it. If there was a cash bond available, we could write the risk synthetically.
I understand that, but what's the difference on my initial question was
portfolio selection with
right,
somebody.
If you're rejecting over half of the proposed collateral, and I thought maybe I just misunderstood your answer. You said, well, this is a synthetic deal versus a cash deal. My question is, why does it make a difference?
In a cash deal, you could have never said, I want these 100 names, because you could only respond to what was coming out in the new issue market. You could only buy securities basically as they were created and issued in the new issue market. So if we were doing a cash deal, we would have a 6 to 12 month ramp-up period, and we would look at every new deal that was issued in the market. And if we liked it, we would buy it in cash and put it into a warehouse for a CDO. So that's why you could never come in and say, oh, I want a portfolio of these 125 cash names, because you wouldn't be able to go get them. Whereas you could do that in a synthetic deal. You'd never be able to find these cash bonds.
Okay. Now, in the letter that ACA's counsel sent us anyway.
I haven't seen that.
But anyway, what I'd like
Sorry.
To do, I know who Alan Roseman is, but I don't know who the other people are. Can you just tell me how they were involved in the ACE, in the Goldman Abacus deal? If they were?
Sure. Dennis Kraft headed our, as it says, head of ABS credit. So every time a new issue deal was available in the market, he and his team would do the analysis. They would start with looking at the seller, servicer, originator. They would run the stresses. They would, if they liked the results of the stresses, they would do a credit write-up and present it to the credit committee. So he was in charge of approving, or sort of starting the process to approve, every credit that would be available to be used in our ABS CDOs. Courtney Henry She did not work on my team or on Dennis's team. She worked for James Rothman in the structured credit group, so they would be responsible for the super senior part. To be honest, I don't know what her role was or wasn't. She was not very senior.
Well, I take it, given that she didn't work in your group or Dennis's group, she wasn't involved in the portfolio selection process.
That's correct.
Okay.
Sorry. Alan Roseman, of course, is our CEO. Tracy Portnoy was a woman who worked for Dennis in the ABS credits, so she would have been involved in reviewing and approving credits. And so not maybe in the selection of what went on, but absolutely responsible for what was approved by ACA. And actually, there you see her name in some of the emails as well. Natalie Rush worked for James Rothman in the structured credit area. Again, wouldn't have been responsible for the underlying assets in the portfolio.
Okay, and Rothman's group was responsible for deciding whether or not to invest in the deal?
As a super senior counterparty, correct.
Okay.
Taking the risk on the super senior tranche.
Okay.
And this, I know this document.
Right, the committee that you sat on. And understanding that Roseman's a CEO, what was his involvement in this deal, if you know?
From my perspective, Alan Roseman sat on what was called the Commitments Committee, which when we wanted to do a new CDO, we had to present that opportunity to him and to the rest of the Commitments Committee, and he had to sign off on whether he thought it was an acceptable deal for ACA to do.
Okay, so
have you seen that?
Have I seen
committee?
I think so.
Definitely.
I've been through a lot of documents recently. Mr. Roseman was not involved in your part of the transaction in terms of evaluating and signing off on the collateral that was going to be part of the deal?
No, he was not on the that would have been done, you know, on each underlying asset went to a credit committee, and it had six voting members on that credit committee, but he was not on that.
Okay, so let me back up and be more general. So then you can provide a little remedial education on how ACA works. You've explained that you've got the folks in your group and Dennis's group that are involved in evaluating the credits and what's going to be included as reference collateral in a synthetic CDO. And then you've got the structured credit group headed up by Mr. Rothman that decide whether or not ACA is going to invest in any of these deals. Did I state that correctly?
You know, I guess we need to make sort of a third distinction. I don't know if I would have characterized the structured credit role as an investment role. They're $950 million. While they were definitely taking what would be considered a long position, they were using the ACA financial guarantee business to do that. So they considered it more of an insurance product as opposed to a direct kind of investment. ACA, in the portfolio management area, we manage 30 different CDOs. You saw the whole list. And a lot of them had reinvestment needs. So we could buy debt off of our own CDOs to put into some of those as well. So there was a third way that ACA could participate in the Abacus deal, and we could buy some of those debt tranches in a funded form as well.
Okay. So explain to me what the CDO manager job is, other than evaluating the credit and then ultimately signing off on what the collateral is going to be. What does ACA do after April 26, 2007, after the deal closes?
Every deal was different. But on this deal, we were only responsible for some monitoring overall. It was a static portfolio, so we couldn't buy or sell or reinvest. But we did do some monitoring, and we did work. There were trustee reports probably issued off the deal, and so we would look at those and tie out on those with the trustee.
And the trustee reports are reporting on what? The performance of the underlying collateral?
And the waterfall in the transaction, correct.
Okay. And when you talk about a static deal, I've done a little. I think I've learned some things over time. The other type of deal is what's known as a dynamic deal. Is that correct?
I would have called managed.
Okay, managed.
Managed.
And the difference there being as collateral pays down, you replace it with other collateral?
Correct. And you could buy or sell, you know, any time you wanted, even if you got principal back and you could reinvest. But you also had the ability to sell if you saw that you didn't like how a bond was doing or performing.
Okay, so other than if it's a dynamic deal, other than helping prepare reports like you do, I assume, on both static and dynamic deals, there's also the function of reinvestment and rebalancing the portfolio, and hence the term managed.
Correct.
Other functions besides those two functions of a CDO manager once the deal closes?
Always investor relations. Continue to answer any investor questions and meet with investors if they wanted. Offer to meet with them.
Okay. I may have asked this. Do you recall if Paulson was an investor in any ACA managed deals before this deal?
I do not believe they were.
Some of these I think I know the answer to, but I just need to show you the document to make sure. Document that's an email thread on February 11th, 2007 that I believe is just internal to Goldman. Let me show you that. It's the last one, the last couple of threads that I'm interested in asking if you ever heard Goldman make reference to in conversations with you. Generally, and so no, you haven't seen the email before, I take it?
No, I have not.
Okay, and do you generally recall discussions with Goldman where, to the effect of the CDO business is dead and they were trying to rush to get deals done?
No, I do not. I think the bottom of this email is talking about one thing very different sort of from the top, right, when they're talking about the index being launched and everything else.
The ABX index.
Yes. Yeah. Okay. They sort of flow from that to general discussion.
They can change topics.
Yes, I do it all the time.
So on this particular deal, when you're having investor relations, are you having investor relation conversations going forward after the deal is closed in April of 07?
I don't recall any specific conversations on this.
Okay. Tom, do you have anything you wanted to
add? Just a few follow-up questions. Let me show you yet another document. This is an email from you to Ms. Hartman. I'm curious about a couple of things here. In particular, you could glance at the portion of those, Gail, I certainly hope. And I'm curious about two aspects of this. Firstly, you expressed concern about having come across as too antagonistic on the call with Fabrice. I assume that's Mr. Tor.
Correct.
And what was the nature, what prompted the antagonist, or your concern about having been too antagonistic?
I don't recall. What we are talking about here is the structure and a downgrade analysis. And, you know, if, in fact, you follow this like a couple of days later or a week later, they come back with the results that I was looking for, mm-hmm. you know, that they're going to run on this. So it was really just a sort of sensitivity downgrade analysis to the debt tranches.
Okay. And actually, that leads to my next question, which is in the second line, speaks in terms of the structure was difficult from a debt investor perspective. Succinctly, what were you specifically concerned about?
You know, these are leveraged transactions, and the first structure was a 0 to 9% first loss piece. So then, you know, that's a pretty hefty leverage ratio. And so I was concerned about the tranches being able to sustain downgrades in the underlying bonds.
So to play this back, would this be a question if there was insufficient subordination in the deal? Was that?
Yeah, it looked a little leveraged, I think.
Okay. Now, earlier in your conversation with Chris, you mentioned that made apparently a distinction between being advised by Paulson and or Goldman that Paulson would be, quote, solely short. Were you, in distinction from that, were you ever advised that Paulson would be going short or partially short?
No, I don't recall any specific discussion on what Goldman would or wouldn't, what Paulson would or wouldn't be doing. I think it was just generally known in the market that people did protect their long positions. If they were going long, they did try to protect themselves somewhat by shorting some to protect themselves.
And given the structure of this deal and the kinds of assets that were going into the deal, what was your understanding of how Paulson would make money out of this deal as the transaction sponsor?
Well, if you were an equity investor in this deal wound up being, you know, 10 to 1 leverage. This contemplation, 0 to 9, is like 11 to 1 leverage, but I think it wound up at 10 to 1 leverage. And the assets, you know, paid one spread, let's say 300 over or something, and you paid out your liabilities, and the excess all flowed through to the equity. So they would get an equity return. And that's how I thought they were going to make money. And if they were going to short, you know, in addition to their long, they would give up some of that, you know, return to protect themselves from the downside, use some of that excess spread to protect themselves.
And if you can put yourself back in time to the point you were putting this deal together, given at least some of the bad news in the market, did that approach or that assumption about the potential profitability of this deal make sense to you at the time?
No, it still did. I mean, the spreads on the underlying assets had actually widened at this point, so that on a leverage basis, if you thought that they were going to perform, that it could be yieldy. If you didn't think they were going to perform, that would be another matter, but lots of investors thought they were going to perform, and you could make a decent equity return.
From press reports, there's a suggestion that you worked on a so-called mandatory transactions, or at least some of them, is that correct?
I believe I worked on one of them.
And can you compare the one mandatory transaction you worked on with Advocates AC1?
Again, the Magnetar transaction was done about 9 months before the Abacus deal. I believe it was both cash and synthetic. So it had, you know, that kind of component as well. So we were buying not only, you know, being able to look at the universe, but also looking at new bonds that were coming out for sale in the market. And, you know, again, I believe that they were going long in the equity there.
Now, after the fact, it's been suggested that the Magnetar deals were structures for going massively short. Was that, did you have any sense of that while you were working on the deal you worked on?
No, I think they were going long and short. You know, but I never thought they were just going massively short.
Okay. All right, those are my questions. Thank you.
So,
I do have one more.
Certainly a document if you haven't seen, you've read about in the press. This, for the record, is an email thread from January 6, 2007, internal to Goldman, where Mr. Tor writes in one thing about a meeting last Friday, which presumably would have been January 5, 2007, which he said was surreal, which I'm sure you've seen. But my question is, were you at the meeting that he's describing, do you recall?
Sorry, I'm going to go back.
Yeah, go back.
Okay, so I had asked if any of the attorneys had seen this.
This has not been released.
This has not been released.
Well,
so
he has signed document, so it's been released.
Okay. So we hadn't
recently released
that. So the first question is, do you know whether or not you were at the Friday meeting that presumably was the 5th, since that email is dated the 6th? I don't think that's my meeting.
Okay.
We don't have the dots, but I don't think that's my meeting, because I don't think Katz and David were all at my meeting. You would have the... there's an email where I say, I've seen it a million times, that says, I wouldn't say the meeting was either good or bad. It just didn't help that I didn't understand how Paulson wanted to participate. Do you recall that email? That would help us with the dates.
Could be that email.
So it's Monday the 8th. The meeting was, I can't tell.
So that could have been the previous Friday that...
Maybe my meeting was the 8th.
Obviously, I don't know. I just, do you have any recollection of either of these guys being there? Cactus and Gerst?
No.
Okay. But just for the record, on Monday, January 8th, 2007, at 7.05 p.m., you write to Gail Kreitman.
I'm pretty sure the meeting was that day. If I'm writing that email ill, I'm pretty sure my meeting was that day.
Okay, so...
I'm not sure that's my meeting. Okay. I can't be sure that's my meeting. We can go back and...
If only there weren't redactions. PSI to give us the documents.
I mean, it sort of fits that I know I went with one of my team members, and like maybe ACA could fit there, but GSC could also fit.
Right.
TCW. I mean, there are a lot of people that could also fit there.
Mm-hmm. And I think, actually...
And they said with John Paulson. I never met John Paulson, also, in connection with this. So I'm not sure this is my meeting.
There's also another email from Torrey where he says, I'm sitting here and it's surreal. Because he uses, that's his not, they can use surreal in another email in connection with your meeting, I think.
I don't think this was my meeting.
I mean, if that helps. There's another Torrey email where he's typing it in real time.
But he's saying the meeting's surreal from here in the, I don't think this.
It's referenced in the SEC complaint, the one I'm referring to, and I think it is different from this one here.
Because he specifically says he met with John Paulson and team. John was never in a meeting with me, at least in this sense. So I don't think that's my meaning.
Paragraph 32 of the SEC complaint talks about a February 2nd, 2007 meeting in New York.
That was in my office. That was...
At ACA's offices in New York City to discuss the reference portfolio.
I met with Paolo three times. First in his office, which my gut is we met Monday the 8th. I don't think this was my meeting that Friday.
I don't know if I have.
There is actually an email back and forth on the Sunday setting up the meeting. There's another email. Again, I've looked at these too many times. Sure. There is a meeting. There's an email on that Sunday. I think it's now looking at this. It's probably Sunday the 7th, where we are setting up Monday's meeting.
I think that's right.
So this meeting, I don't think that's the meeting.
If that's not the meeting, who might that be a meeting with ACA?
No, it doesn't. No, it's not an ACA meeting. Okay. Nobody at ACA. It's not an ACA meeting at all. This is not an ACA meeting.
Okay.
This is another somebody else.
I guess just stepping back, I mean, given the revelations that many investors were actually net short, does that call into question the model of the synthetic CDO? Does that make you, is there something about the market that was structured wrong?
Was the market structured wrong? No, I think, I mean, just like in the equity markets, investors can take a position and put into practice their investment philosophy. Could disclosure be better? Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. Do I think investors have the right to take a position? Yes.
I guess given that ACA, lost a lot of money ultimately on this, do you think it was a risk management breakdown at ACA? What do you attribute that to?
Again, ACA's structured credit business lost a significant amount of money in almost all of the super senior protection it wrote, I believe, right? Mm-hmm. I haven't been completely involved. I think it was a breakdown of several things as a single A counterparty. Why were we able to write all of that protection. Mm-hmm. That's why we're, you know, AAA counterparties willing to take single A insurance risk, mm-hmm. that kind of thing. You know, wouldn't point to this one deal in synthetic as being the issue. You know, it's the same issue as AIG, right? Being able to write all of its protection. ACA was much smaller scale, but it's the same issue. Mm-hmm. So, and back, right? I mean, then, right? I mean, it's the same issue. Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so how did the market change in 06, 07 versus before? I mean, it seems that there were some aspects of the market that changed. There was more synthetics as opposed to cash. There was
We did cash deals in 2007. I think what happened is that you saw with the downgrades on the underlying residential securities starting, with some losses starting to come through at the bottom of the capital structures on residential transactions, I think you saw investors getting cold feet about continuing to play until they knew what the ultimate losses and models they should be running, loss models they should be running.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that slowed the CDO market and the mortgage market in general.
So that would have been spring 07 or even?
Spring to summer 2007. I think sort of July, August 2007 were when the rating agencies came out with the beginning of the downgrades of the underlying residential.
And did ACA start to take a view around them that they didn't want to be in this business anymore?
I don't think ACA, I mean, from a structured credit perspective, I can't really say, but from the CDO asset management, I don't think we took a perspective that we didn't want to be in the business. I mm-hmm. think we took the perspective that it was going to be very difficult to do the business because, you know, it would not be as easy to structure transactions in the market for investors. And that was across all of our products, not only ABS, but leveraged loans and corporate mm-hmm. credit default swaps. We had all of those businesses.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the way you talk about the solely equity versus just solely short versus both. I mean, was it very common for equity investors to take a short position in the same deal?
No, they didn't take it in the deal necessarily, mm-hmm. right? I mean, mm-hmm. you could go long equity in a CDO, and then you could short the index.
Mm-hmm.
You could short individual names in credit default swaps, but those individual names were the underlying references. I don't think you generally shorted the CDO. I don't think there was a very big CDO credit default swap market. I think you had to go on to the underlying reference obligations to mm-hmm. to the residential mortgage-backed securities if you wanted to short.
I mean, just to understand the market, so even for cash CDOs, even in 06 earlier, the equity investors would often be hedging themselves?
I think so.
One way or the other.
I mean, as I've stated before, ACA hedged itself through the ABX index as well.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you.